And welcome back again to the Cetera Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. We were very glad we have that opportunity to speak to Ann Garrison, who will follow that story of Ethiopia and surrounding states. This is going to be, I would say it's going to be a big one. There's a lot. The international forces, major powers have changed over the past 10, 15 years. And now they have a new problem among themselves, is sorting this out without everybody getting hurt. So incidentally, Canada's role has been to be passively aligning with the US, not so much out in front at the moment, but not terribly helpful. They're going to be echoing US opinion. This is not good. Canada, we've said on the Taylor Report, should actually become a member of the international community. And it's an opportunity to say once again that if Canada is going to be called multiracial, multicultural, proud of its diversity, then we should not be aligned only with white Europeans. And we should not use the word international community when actually all we mean are Europeans. There's some kind of a hitch here, some sort of a problem, an intellectual black hole, I would say, where Canada wants to use that terminology. Justin Trudeau and others were diverse, multicultural. Well, the world is multicultural. The United Nations is living proof. And we need to look more closely at the opinions of Kenya, of Venezuela, of Cuba, of China, Vietnam, South Africa, when we talk about things. Remember, for example, the government of South Africa went out of its way, the black government of South Africa, to say to the Americans, do not bomb, do not destroy Libya. The president of the country visited Libya, stood alongside Gaddafi and said, we are with you, we respect your sovereignty, and we urge the great powers to stay out and not to forcefully intervene. But they did. So we were multicultural in our foreign policy and diverse. We would listen to South Africa. We would listen to Zaire. We would listen to, lend an ear to all the African countries and Asian countries who listen to each other, by the way. That, it has to be underlined. You cannot claim that we're multicultural and diverse and celebrate our diversity and then snub all the countries that the people that make us diverse come from. This is Data Reports, CIT. I want to comment on the Olympics. We have to praise the Canadian teams, the Canadian athletes, and of course, all the athletes who participated. Number one thing to be said is events of this kind are very, very good for people. You get to see all the great countries and people represented and get an idea of their character and come to and inevitably to respect them and to feel for them when they win, when they lose, and to see their sportsmanship. There was a lot of it at the Olympics. And we should be very pleased with particularly the women's soccer team, which has been through a lot of difficulties, and they've always been in the shadow of a very strong and a team from the United States, which tends to reflect the more chauvinistic qualities of the government. That is the idea that they're always going to be number one. The individual athletes have been wonderful, but the Americans are crazy medal counters, and they rode a lot of really insulting articles about other countries, other individuals. They targeted China. I think China should be praised for, and it should be recognized. They won 38 goals. That is, and Olympic scoring, they only count the gold. 38 for China, 38 for the United States. With the additional point that China, part of that multicultural, diverse world, is a developing country. It had been occupied by foreign powers for 150 years. And before it declared its independence in 1949, it did not begin to participate in the Olympics until relatively recently. I couldn't tell you the year, but it's fairly recent. And now they came away with 38 goals. And that's heartening. Heartening to the developing world, because God didn't assign countries a particular place in the hierarchy. All countries should be treated as equal and with respect, and be permitted the opportunity to develop. We have Joe Biden says that he'll decide whether a country can develop if it bothers him. And so Americans need to correct their little problem at home and find governments that respect other people's and become respectable to their own. I want to mention what our problem is on the matter of COVID. It remains so lurking danger. The United States now has 100,000 cases, new cases a day. That's, we're talking Trump numbers. I mean, everybody said the problem was Trump. These are big, large numbers, very worrying numbers. And they reveal something about America at the moment, and about Europe too. France is seeing this. UK, there's bad feelings. And these bad feelings within the population of mutual suspicion and hostility in their own public. When you have a public health issue where they can't agree on how to save themselves, how to best protect everyone, can't agree. And some actually say they don't care. This is class differences and ethnic differences writ large. And Western media has not been able to bring itself to adequately discuss the fact that the People's Republic of China has been absolutely exemplary in protecting its population. But that's because, and this they cannot, ideologically, it's impossible for them to say. It's because the people have confidence in their government. Why would that be? Well, since 1949, China has developed itself as an independent country, very self-reliant because it's surrounded by and confronting hostile adversaries, you know, true adversaries that wanted to attack and bomb them. Douglas MacArthur wanted to use hydrogen bomb, he said, on China. So they, in that environment, they developed until they reached a kind of lift-off phase where they had become a very strong economy. Well, why wouldn't then the population be proud as a population, be trusting as a population, if the government has delivered on its promises? That's very simple. And why doesn't the population of the United States trust its government? And don't kid yourself, or don't even, the Americans, unfortunately, are left with having to talk to each other about what their problem is. They don't trust the government. They do not trust each other. And that's because of a failure, frankly, to have a people's government that delivers to the people on their needs, particularly emergencies. Think of New Orleans and what happened there, where Kanye West, I believe it was, who stood in front of a microphone and said, "Bush, George Bush doesn't care about black people." Well, who could say he was wrong? There was a division. There was a, oh, those are them. That's them. oh, that's, they are having a problem. Too bad for them, because I don't have a problem. As a British movie called it, said, I'm all right, Jack. Well, I'm all right, Jack will destroy a country. And at the moment, this, there isn't a cure. I don't know of a cure, actually, for the Americans. It's a political cure that is, I would say, I do know a cure. They need a people's government. They should have a socialist government. They should not have a capitalist government. That's a cure. But even in the immediate short range, I'll give you an example of how they could solve it. I mean, that ought to be done. The leaders of all parties should come together. Mr. Trump, who's had two shots, by the way, should be invited to go to the White House, sit alongside the president, and instead of acrimony, say, well, we work together to develop a vaccine. You get credit, I get credit. We have a duty towards the American people to see to it that they get it. But if you're going to play keep away in politics, if that's what you're going to do, when the people are suffering, well, they're already divided. And I can guarantee you, they're going to be more divided, much more divided. And that's to lay those two systems alongside each other, which is not permitted. I understand the Washington Post will not permit it. New York Times, CBS, CBC, they have all been passed out their instructions. Bait China every day of the week. Why? Well, because they were successful in fighting. And there is, yes, there's a new virus. They're fighting that one. They do not have 100,000 cases a day. That's the exceptional country, the gold medal winner of ineptitude that has that. But they can't hide the fact. France the same way. They are divided. All this talk about, oh, I think we see a problem in the streets of Hong Kong. Oh, I think I see a problem maybe in Zimbabwe, et cetera. Oh, there's been a demonstration. Someone was arrested by the brutal government of whatever. That's for, well, in France, they had demonstrations for more than a year of the widest possible expression of the population in hostility to Macron. But US and Britain didn't say, oh, look at, boy, the French are, they're very criminal the way they treat people. They're terrible and people hate them. They didn't say that. France is a member of the team and they protect. But they, again, you cannot hide the reality. The people do not trust. And you can yell all you want, but even having, you know, the heights of the control over monopoly media, the problem with it is that your credibility goes down and people simply stare at you. Go ahead and tell them as many lies as you want, or pat each other on the back, appoint a new hero, ain't gonna work. You know, the oldest political proverb we have is, it's all politics. So, since I was a kid, people said to me, Taylor, are you kidding me? It's all politics. If we're talking about baseball, we talk about who's going to be the chairman of an important committee. The answer is it's politics. They're right. But because we have no transparency and no one will admit that, suspicion, hostility increases. I want to remember an outstanding person, Esperance Mukashima, who died quite recently. She was a winner of the Victoire and Gabiri Prize. She was a Tutsi woman, and she had a double tragedy. Her life, where she was persecuted, she lost her husband. She spoke out against the government of Paul Kagame because of the way it was treating everyone, including Tutsi refugees. And she had a particular loss. Her son, Richard Sheha, was with a number of Catholic bishops near Kabgayi in Rwanda, a notorious murder in June of 1994. And they were gunned down in a group. And her son, tragically, was in the arms of one of the bishops. He was an eight-year-old, was playing with them. And they were, he didn't understand there was danger. No one knew there was danger. But the RPF murdered those bishops and murdered her son. So we really need to remember Esperance Mukashima and fight for justice in Rwanda. And this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. We'll see you next week.